Tall, black metal cabinets were all he could see. They stretched out of sight, neatly spaced.
You learning to fix refrigerators?
Mission asked.
Rodney glanced over his shoulder. He laughed.
Those are computers. He still had that condescending tone. Mission nearly reminded his friend that today was his birthday, that they were the same age. Rodney was the only one he ever felt like reminding.
Jeffrey cleared his throat impatiently, seemed annoyed by the chatter.
Rodney turned to the security chief. You mind if we have a few seconds? He asked. Jeffrey shifted his weight, the stiff leather of his boots squeaking.
You know I can't, he said. I'll probably get chewed out for allowing even this.
You're right.
Rodney shook his head, as if he shouldn't have asked.
Mission studied the exchange. Even though it had been months since he'd last seen him, he sensed that Rodney was the same as always. He was in trouble for something, probably being forced to do the most reviled task in all of IT for a brash thing he'd said or done.
He smiled at the thought.
Rodney tensed suddenly, as though he'd heard something deep inside the room. He held up a finger to the others and asked them to wait there.
Just a second, he said, rushing off, bare feet slapping on the steel floors.
Jeffrey crossed his arm and looked Mission up and down unhappily.
You two grow up down the hall from each other?
We went to school together, Mission said.
So what did Rod do?
You know, Mrs. Crow used to make us sweep the entire nest and clean the blackboards if we cut up in class. We did our fair share of sweeping, the two of us.
Jeffrey appraised him for a moment, and then his expressionless face shattered into tooth and grin.
You think your friend is in trouble?
He said. He seemed on the verge of laughing.
Son, you have no idea.
Before Mission could question him, Rodney returned, smiling and breathless.
Sorry, he said to Jeffrey. I had to get that.
He turned to Mission.
Thanks for coming by, man. Good to see you.
That was it?
Good to see you, too.
Mission sputtered, surprised that their visit would be so brief.
Hey, don't be a stranger.
He went to give his old friend a hug, but Rodney stuck out a hand instead. Mission looked at it for a pause, confused, wondering if they'd grown apart so far, so fast.
Give my best to everyone,
Rodney said, as if he expected never to see any of them again. Jeffrey cleared his throat, clearly annoyed and ready to go.
I will,
Mission said, fighting to keep the sadness out of his voice. He accepted his friend's hand. They shook like strangers, the smile on Rodney's face quivering, the folds of the note hidden in his palm, digging sharply into Mission's hand.
Chapter 35. It was a miracle Mission didn't drop the note as it was passed to him, a miracle that he knew something was amiss, to keep his mouth closed, to not stand there a fool in front of Jeffrey and say, "Hey, what's this?" Instead, he kept the wad of paper balled in his fist as he was escorted back to the security station. They were nearly there when someone called, "Porter!" from one of the officers. Jeffrey placed a hand on Mission's chest, forcing him to a stop. They turned, and a familiar man strode down the hallway to meet them. It was Mr. Wick, the head of IT, familiar to most porters. The endless shuffle of broken and repaired computers kept the upper dispatch on 10 as busy as supply kept the lower dispatch on 120. Mission gathered that may have changed since yesterday.
You on duty, son?
Mr. Wick studied the porter's chief, knotted around Mission's neck. He was a tall man, with a tidy beard and bright eyes. Mission had to crane his neck to meet Wick's gaze.
Yes, sir, he said, hiding the note from Rodney behind his back.
He pressed it into his pocket with his thumb, like a seed going into soil.
You need something moved, sir?
I do.
Mr. Wick studied him for a moment, stroked his beard. You're the Jones boy, right? The Zero. Mission felt a flash of heat around his neck at the use of the term, a reference to the fact that no lottery number had been pulled for him. Yes, sir. It's Mission. He offered his hand. Mr. Wick accepted it. Yes. Yes, I went to school with your father. And your mother, of course. He paused to give Mission time to respond. Mission ground his teeth together and said nothing. He let go of the man's hand before his sweaty palms had a chance to speak for him. Say I wanted to move something without going through dispatch. Mr. Wick smiled. His teeth were white as chalk. And say I wanted to avoid the sort of nastiness that took place last night a few levels up. Mission glanced over at Jeffrey, who seemed disinterested in the conversation. It was strange to hear this sort of offer from a man of authority, especially in front of a member of security. But there was one thing Mission had discovered since emerging from his shadowing days. Things only got darker.
I don't follow, Mission said.
He fought the urge to turn and see how far they were from the security gate. A woman emerged from an office down the hall, behind Mr. Wick. Jeffrey made a gesture with his hand and she stopped and kept her distance, out of earshot.
I think you do. And I admire your discretion.
200 chits to move a package a half dozen levels from supply. Mission tried to remain calm.
200 chits? A month's pay for half a day's work?
He immediately feared this was some sort of test. Maybe Rodney had gotten in trouble for flunking a similar one.
I don't know, he said.
It's an open invitation. Wick said. The next porter who comes through here will get the same offer. I don't care who does it, but only one will get the chits.
Wick raised a hand. You don't have to answer me, just show up and ask for Joyce at the supply counter. Tell her you're doing a job for Wick. There'll be a delivery report detailing the rest.
I'll think about it, sir.
Good.
Mr. Wick smiled. Anything else? Mission asked.
No, you're free to go.
He nodded to Jeffrey, who snapped back from wherever he'd checked out to.
Thank you, sir.
Mission turned and followed the chief.
Oh, and happy birthday, son,
Mr. Wick called out.
Mission glanced back, didn't say thanks, just hurried after Jeffrey and through the security gate, past the crowds and out onto the landing, down two turns of stairs, where he finally reached into his pocket for the note from Rodney.
Paranoid that he might drop it and watch it bounce off the stairs and through the rail, he carefully unfolded the scrap of paper. It looked like the same rag blend Mrs. Crowe's note had been written on, the same threads of purple and red mixed in with the rough grey weave. For a moment, Mission feared the note would be addressed to the Crow rather than to him. Maybe more lines of old nursery rhymes. He worked the piece of paper flat. One side was blank. He turned it over to read the other. It wasn't addressed to anyone. Just two words, which reminded Mission of the way his friend's smile had quivered when they shook hands. Mission felt suddenly alone. There was the smell of something burning, lingering in the stairwell. A tinge of smoke that mixed with the paint from drying graffiti. He took the small note and tore it into ever smaller pieces. He kept tearing until there was nothing left to shred, and then sprinkled the dull confetti over the rail to drift down and disappear into the void. The evidence was gone, but the message lingered vividly in his mind. The hasty scrawl, the shadowy scratch, the edge of a coin or a spoon had made as it was dragged across the paper. Two words barely legible from his friend who never needed anybody or asked for anything. Help me. And that was all.
Silo 1. Chapter 36.
Finding the right silo was easy enough. Donald could study the old schematic and remember standing on those hills, peering down into the wide bowls that held each facility. The sound of grumbling ATVs came back. The plumes of dust kicked up as they bounced across the ridges where the grass had not yet filled in. He remembered that they had been growing grass over those hills, straw and seed spread everywhere, a task hindsight made both unnecessary and sad. Standing on that ridge in his memory, he was able to picture the Tennessee delegation. It would be Silo 2. Once he had this, he dug deeper. It took a bit of fumbling to remember how the computer program worked, how to sift through lives that lived in databases. There was an entire history there of each silo, and you knew how to read it, but it only went so far. It went back to made-up names, back to the orientation. It didn't stretch to the legacy beyond. The old world was hidden behind bombs and a fog of mist and forgetting. He had the right silo, but locating Helen might prove impossible. He worked frantically while Anna sang in the shower. She had left the bathroom door open, steam billowing out. Donald ignored what he took to be an invitation. He ignored the throbbing, the yearning, the hormonal rush of being near an ex-lover after centuries of need, and searched instead for his wife. There were 4,000 names in that first generation of Silo 2. 4,000 exactly. Roughly half were female. There were three Helens. Each had a grainy picture taken for their work ID stored on the servers. None of the Helens matched what he remembered his wife looking like, what he thought she looked like. Tears came unbidden. He wiped them away, furious at himself. From the shower, Anna sang a sad song from long ago, while Donald flipped through random photos. After a dozen, the faces of strangers began to meld together and threaten to erode the vision he held of Helen in his memory. He went back to searching by name. Surely he could guess the name she would have chosen. He had picked Troy for himself those many years ago, a clue leading him back to her. He liked to think she would have done the same. He tried Sandra, her mother's name, but neither of the two hits were right. He tried Danielle, her sister's name. One hit, not her. She wouldn't come up with something random, would she? They had talked once of what they might name their kids. It was gods and goddesses. A joke at first, but Helen had fallen in love with the name Athena. He did a search. Zero hits in that first generation. The pipes squealed as Anna turned off the shower. Her singing subsided back into a hum. A hymn for the funeral they were about to attend. Donald tried a few more names, anxious to discover something, anything. He would search every night if he had to. He wouldn't sleep until he found her. "Do you need to shower before the service?" Anna called out from the bathroom. He didn't want to go to the service, he nearly said. He only knew Victor as someone to fear. The grey-haired man across the hall, always watching, dispensing drugs, manipulating him. At least that's how the paranoia of his first shift made it all seem. "I'll go like this," he said. He still wore the beige overalls they'd given him the day before. He flipped through random pictures again, starting at the top of the alphabet. What other name? The fear was that he'd forget what she looked like, or that she'd look more and more like Anna in his mind. He couldn't let that happen. "Find anything?" She snuck up behind him and reached for something on the desk. A towel was wrapped around her breasts and reached the middle of her thighs. Her skin was wet. She grabbed a hairbrush and walked, humming, back to the bathroom. Donald forgot to answer. His body responded to Anna in a way that made him furious and full of guilt. He was still married, he reminded himself. He would be until he knew what had happened to Helen. He would be loyal to her forever. Loyalty. On a whim, he searched for the name Karma. One hit. Donald sat up straight. He hadn't imagined a hit. It was their dog's name, the nearest thing he and Helen ever had to a child of their own. He brought up the picture.